What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better to laugh than cry, I suppose.
I literally, and City Limits did not hear this, I literally just said that to Bob, didn't I, Bob?
You did.
Two seconds ago, I said, if you're
so
not
you
going
to... you had no idea that was coming?
No, none. 2 seconds ago, I said to you, it's better to laugh than cry,
it's
if
always
there's a
better.
Choice.
Although both are great emotions, and quite frankly, you should do one of both of those things every day.
Crying can be very healthy, Bob.
Crying is very healthy.
It can be cleansing. You probably cry every day when I walk in the office.
No.
Let's get to Johnny Parotta. Day one for the Bad News Pirates was absolutely incredible. Just absolutely incredible. I mean, we couldn't even get out of pitchers and catchers report without bad news being delivered. Spencer Horwitz apparently has one functional arm, their big offseason acquisition. And then in the midst of what was a generally sort of optimistic story, I guess a lot of people talked about Key Brian Hayes. And the one I read, so I'm reading this, you know, Key Brian Hayes, he had a different weightlifting regimen. He's real happy, looks good. All of a sudden, Destiny's Child comes up with this line, Bob, and I quote, "As he has said publicly before, Hayes acknowledged that his lower back issues will likely linger for the rest of his career and life." That doesn't sound all that encouraging, does it?
No, it sounds like a Key Brian Hayes situation all over again.
Let's bring up, it is
different
Hayes.
Different body part.
Yes, let's bring on Johnny Parotta live from Bradenton. He's on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Johnny writes for Pittsburgh Sports Now. And John, you had sort of a different report from Spencer Horwitz himself. We're all thinking this is a wrist injury. You said it's a thumb injury. Am I right about that? Tell us.
Well, you know, I only talked to him briefly, probably not even a minute, Joe. He had to go to a meeting, and I just walked up and asked him. I said, "What happened?" And he goes, "Oh, I just had a problem." And he showed me where the scar was, and it was between his pointer finger and his thumb. And, you know, being the orthopedic surgeon that I'm not, I looked it up on the internet, and it's actually, the way he described it, it's a thumb extensor is what it's called. So, I mean, that wasn't his words, but where he showed me where he'd been operated on, it didn't seem like a wrist operation to me. And again, I mean, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a medical expert. So I'm a little puzzled by this whole thing, to be honest. There's a lot of contradictions and a lot of kind of gray area here.
Well, did you at least get the impression that the Pirates knew that there was something wrong with this guy when they traded for him?
Well, Ben Charrington said that they knew he had what was termed chronic wrist problems, but they did their, you know, normal physical exam that they put on any players that, you know, just not the Pirates, but any team, whenever they acquire someone, routinely does a physical and makes sure their medical records check out okay. He thought that it was worth the risk, and, you know, I know a lot of people think that he got damaged goods, but the way Horwitz explained it to me and the way Charrington explained it is he started feeling pain toward the middle and to the end of January. So, I mean, this is this particular injury, apparently, from what they're saying, happened a month or even a little bit more than a month after the trade. So, you know, they're painting a rosy picture. Everything's going to be okay, 6 to 8 weeks. But boy, I don't know how you can have surgery in that spot of your hand and be ready to go on opening day.
And that's the hand that really generates the power from his point of view, too. So, you know, they're counting on him to hit some home runs when he does get in there. 6 to 8 weeks also sounds like that's the timeout. And then when he comes back, he has to go through what amounts to his own spring training, doesn't he?
Yeah, he really does. And that's why you're right, Bob. And I mean, that's why I just don't see much of a way he can be ready by March 27th, unless he's an unbelievably quick healer. I think this is going to be a while. And you know, the other concern is, you know, when hitters have hand surgery, wrist surgery, whatever you want to call it, thumb surgery, whatever this was, they usually don't regain full strength in that hand and thumb and wrist for quite a while. So even when he comes back, I think he's not going to be totally 100% healed, probably maybe not through the second half of the season.
John Parada on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline. We're talking about Spencer Horwitz and the injury, and that leads to the age-old question, who's on first? And Johnny, I was thinking today, you have one candidate, Triola, who can't hit, maybe another in Henry Davis who can't hit or field, another Brian Reynolds plays right field, and I've never heard of Derek Hall or DJ Stewart. Anybody else for me? Who's the leader in the clubhouse here?
Is Matt Gorski still around?
He's not in big league camp. He's still in the organization.
How about Will Craig? maybe they can practice rundowns.
That's
between
a kaleidoscope.
First.
That's his middle name, Kaleidoscope. Calliopes.
Oh, is Rick Lancelotti still around, Johnny? Could they convert him to first base? What the hell is
you
going on here?
A lot of home runs, didn't you, Joe?
Yes, back at War Memorial in Buffalo.
I was going to say, yep. I know why you're bringing that name up.
So who's going to play there?
Well, that's a great question. I think Billy Cook might be a potential answer there. They like what they saw of him when he got caught up last year after they got him from Baltimore in a trade there at the deadline. You know, they ruled Reynolds out and all but basically ruled Andy Rodriguez out. You know, but the first, you know, DJ Stewart, he's more of an outfielder. I don't know. You know, I'm just kind of stabbing names here. I don't think, and I know they don't know either. Derek Hall is a somewhat interesting player. 3 years ago, Philly called him up. He hit 9 home runs in 41 games in the big leagues. So, I mean, he has not a very big track record, but a little bit of a track record of hitting for power in the big leagues. You know, he was blocked in Philly by Reese Hoskins. Then when Hoskins left, they moved Bryce Harper to first base. And so Hall was never going to play first base in Philly. So it'll be interesting to see. He's a big guy, and, you know, he has some pop. But I'll be curious. I don't think they want to commit to signing a free agent if, in fact, Horwitz will be back fairly soon into the season. So I think they're really going to – this is one time where I really think it's going to be an open competition this spring. I know a lot of times they say that, and they already kind of know in their mind who they want to win the job. But I really think they're open-minded to anything right now.
You know, that's the thing, though. This first base situation has been a problem for the last decade, to be honest, and they have never really solved it. And they keep doing the same old stuff instead of going out for a bona fide guy. And I'm going to bring this up only because I thought at the time, and I realize he is nowhere near what he once was. But I see, you know, and I was one of those saying, if you really need a first baseman, why wouldn't you go after Paul Goldschmidt? $12 million for 1 year. if you're going to play this game with all these musical parts, why not just get him, John? Was there any evidence that they were at least interested? Because he is not the same. The cost has come way down. But I still believe that even at his age, he's a good defensive guy, and he can hit 15 home runs.
Yeah, and I don't know why they didn't pursue him. I thought he was a good fit for at least 1 year, and they ended up going to the Yankees. My understanding is the Pirates didn't pursue him. And, you know, I mean, they don't spend $12 million on players. As Dave Littlefield used to say, the reality of the situation.
Johnny, let me ask you this. Except I forgot what I was going to ask you. Oh, Henry Davis is one of the people that I mentioned. Who knows? Maybe he could play first. Where is he going to play? What's happening with this guy?
He never even gets mentioned anymore when you talk to, management or Shelton or anyone. Now, I'm not saying that he's totally off the radar, and I don't want that to be construed that way. But, I've thought that for a couple years now. If the guy couldn't play right field and the guy can't catch an acceptable level at the big leagues, why not try him at first base? You know, I mean, you don't have to be the greatest athlete on the field to play first base. But they seem to have no indication to try it. I know I mentioned it last year to a couple people in the organization, and they shot it down right out of hand. And I think it would be worth. I mean, this is the time to do it, spring training, to give him a look and then see if maybe he can play that position.
Have you gotten an indication from anybody there where Henry Davis will play in spring training? What position?
They say he's a catcher.
Oh, for God's sakes, Johnny.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I don't run the team, or they wouldn't be losing on me.
Bob, what are we doing here? We have 18 catchers now. How is this guy still a catcher?
Only to be exceeded by 19 shortstops.
What are they doing? They have Andy Rodriguez. They have Joey Bart. They have the human rain delay. I'm out of words.
Well, you remember when John Madden had the all-Madden team, and he'd always have five tight ends on his team because he thought every offensive formation should have five tight ends. Maybe the Pirates will find a way to play five against them.
Well, all I know is that they're wasting an opportunity because his pitching staff does appear to be pretty good. I want to ask you about Oviedo because I saw him throwing some soft toss here. I guess it was today or yesterday. What's his status? Because I still think he could be an effective guy in this rotation. Is he expected to be there when?
He has no restrictions. He says he's back to full strength. He feels ready to go. And, he missed all of last season. And he had a surgery not long after the 2023 season. So he basically had almost all of that off season to begin his rehab. Then he rehabbed all of last season. So, yeah, I think he's going to be ready to go when the season opens. I'm sure they'll keep an eye on him, and they might monitor his innings early on. But it appears to me, and in talking to him, he's very upbeat and very optimistic. He says he feels good and he's ready to go.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, to me, is best suited as a utility man, Johnny. And as I wrote this morning, the Pirates have more utility men than Duquesne Light. I mean, it seems like everybody they bring in is a utility man. How do they not have a shortstop? They've drafted four shortstops in the first round in the last 10 years and about 30 other guys who play the position. Are they ever going to have an everyday shortstop? And what do you think of Kiner-Falefa at that position?
I like him as a utility guy. I think he's a valuable player as a utility guy. I talked to Yankees people. He was their starting shortstop in 22 before Anthony Volpe came up in 23 and took over that position. They don't think he's an everyday shortstop. They got by with him that year in 22. It is a little disheartening, like you said. They draft so many shortstops that none of them are good enough in pro ball to play the position. And now you have Connor Griffin, who they took first round last year. And there's already a lot of talk that, well, maybe he's not really a shortstop. He's a center fielder. And it's baffling, and it's just disappointing. Year after year after year, they can't find a shortstop either in the draft or in free agency or by a trade or anything. They just patch it together.
All right, so looking at this situation from a Paul Skeens lens, how do you think he reacts to this? Does he care at all about what they do? Because he knows his timeline is probably going to be what it is here, and then he'll move on and just understand that's how it goes. Or does he get frustrated as a competitor? He strikes me as a very serious competitor, and watching nothing happen in an offseason when they needed a lot of questions answered would make me a little annoyed.
I think Jason Schmidt, you remember the old Pirates pitcher from the 90s. He called it the Bucko. Bucko malaise, where basically you come over to a new team, or in this case, Steve's got drafted, and you're a young guy, and you're just happy to be in the big leagues, excited for the opportunity. You look around, and you see other pretty good young players, and you think, wow, we could really build something here. And then he said about 3 or 4 years in is when you really realize, like, we're never, ever going to win here. So I don't think Skeens is yet to that point, but I think eventually he will be, because like you said, he's a competitor and the guy wants to win. Like, I was talking to him yesterday, just chit-chatting, not a formal interview. And I said, hey, we were talking about him finishing third in the Cy Young, which I think is even more impressive than winning Rookie of the Year. And he goes, I'm not stopping there. I'm building on that. I'm going to keep pushing forward. And I mean, he's sincere about it. He wants to win. And I am sure at some point, I don't think it has set in this soon in his career, he will get frustrated and probably, if not asked to be traded, certainly hope to be traded.
Is Bubba Chandler going to open in the rotation? And are there financial ramifications that might negate that?
You know, there are financial ramifications, but they did, you know, they brought Jared Jones north with him last year, and he had a full year of service, which, you know, pushes ahead his arbitration, his free agency clock. I just don't know if they really have a need as much as they did last year, because the rotation is much more solid now than it was a year ago at this time. I mean, you have Keller and Skeens and Jones, and Bailey Falder gives him a left-hander in a rotation. I mean, he's a rotation guy. And Oviedo should be ready for the start of the season. So I would say the way to shake out, now, of course, barring injury or something this spring, the Chandler probably starts the year back to AAA. But he's on the way, no doubt. We're going to see him in Pittsburgh sometime this year for sure.
I want to ask you real quick before we go here with you, Johnny Pirato, about pitch counts specific to Jared Jones and Paul Skeens. I would imagine that Paul Skeens should be on no such thing. If he wants to pitch, he should be allowed to pitch to whenever. Or are they still going to utilize whatever they say and then, you know, go into the eighth inning with somebody, ninth inning with somebody? Do you think that applies to him this year based on what he did? And how many innings do you think would be okay for him?
I asked Paul how many innings he wanted to pitch this year, and he said 240. And I looked at him and I said, do you know what era of baseball you're playing in? And he laughed and he goes, I'm preparing like I'm going to throw 240 innings. Probably it'll be 180, 190. But I think there'll always be at least some kind of pitch count. I don't think you'll see him ever get into the 120, 130 range. But I do think they trust the fact that he's in great shape and he really takes care of his body. And I think it's not going to be one of these where last year where they were ultra careful with him and pulling him after, 85 pitches, things like that. I think he'll go a little longer. And in Jones' case, a little different. He had a little bit of an arm problem, missed some time last year in the second half of the season. So they'll probably monitor him a little more closely with the pitch count. But I would say the governors, for the most part, are off on Skeens now.
Lastly, Johnny, Deion reported that he's hearing their biggest move of the offseason might still be ahead before opening day. Are you hearing the same? What do you make of that?
Well, I wouldn't be overly surprised. I mean, you look, it's been the last, I mean, this has been this way the last couple of years. There's still a lot of players that get all the way to spring training unsigned. I mean, you look, Alex Bregman, one of the five best players on the market, just signed late last night with the Red Sox. So Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. I don't get a strong sense that it's going to happen, but I also get the sense that they're not necessarily closed off to adding more players. So, we'll see what happens. But I don't think it's going to be something major. I mean, I don't see it. I don't get that sense. I'm certainly not hearing that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
What do you have planned the rest of the day down in Florida, Johnny? And how nice is it there?
Well, actually, I'm driving over to Jupiter for MLB for part of spring training media day. And it's very beautiful. If the park thermometer here is right, it's 87 degrees.
Oh.
And Joe, I know you'll appreciate
why did
it.
You do that, Johnny?
I know. And not only that, but I'm driving through Arcadia, Florida on the way over to the other coast. And they had in the parking lot of a Ford dealership the tallest Ford Explorer ever.
What do you think
of
that?
I mean, what more could you want? What more could you want?
Tallest.
What more
How do you
could
drive
you
a tall
want?
Car? That should be on
who's
the Monster
driving
Jam.
It, Manute Ball?
Wheels. I swear it like sits like 10 feet tall. You'd have to get a step ladder to get in it.
Victor Wembanyama would have no problem.
Who?
Victor Wembanyama. He'd have no problem.
He'd be about the only person that could get in it.
Wow.
Thank you, Johnny.
Enjoy your drive.
You're
and
a wonderful
safe
man.
Travels to you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Good talking with you guys. Take care.
See you, buddy. He's the best, isn't he, Bob?
Yeah, he is.
Man, he's been going down there for
decades. Very credible for all these years, and he does it. It's a labor of love for him. He really does.
And he's very good at it.
Very good at it. And is a Beaver County guy.
So the most notable thing he said there was, besides him having sort of a different report on the Horwitz injury, is Paul Skeens wants to throw 240. How about that?
I think that's fine. That's doable. What I want to see from him or Derek Shelton is when he's involved, because I don't expect their hitting to be an asset, of course, which means you're going to find him in a lot of one-run games, you know, whether he's up or down. I don't want to see, because of the situation at hand in the eighth inning, that, you know, the need always to go to a bullpen because we have an eighth inning guy, a ninth inning guy, this guy. If he is cranking, then let him crank. There's no reason unless he seems to have issues and he wants to get out. But
yeah,
I'd ride him all the way. He's my best option, and I'm not taking him out of a game when I still think he's willing to do it and he can do it.
And you won't take Jared Jones out of a perfect game after 57 pitches?
Not this year.
All right. Coming up, Jeff Hathorn's going to join us in studio for the 1 p.m. hour. We'll talk everything.
Nice.
We'll talk everything. Starting maybe with Steeler quarterbacks.
Sidney Crosby.
Sid Mario last night.
That was beautiful.
I never got a chance to weigh in on that because I missed the first hour of the show.
Well, you have a chance coming up.
The whole Mario thing, that's what I was reminded of when I saw him get introduced, Bob, is this rift with
Fenway
Sports Group. And what a shame it is. Well, just what a shame it is that he's not around. That's got to get patched up.
Yeah, I would imagine, but I don't think, it runs deep with him.
I know.
He's a man of principle. And so, we'll see. I don't hold my breath on that, but I was glad to see Bell Center. He is revered as, the iconic person he is. And, boy, the response for him was unbelievable. Great to see.
That was really fun. What do you make of this, Bob? I like Matt Wenzel very much. Do you like him? Have you met him?
Matty V, yes.
Wonderful man, isn't he?
Very nice. So what did he write?
Well, I wrote last week ripping all the Pittsburgh sports owners these days as either being distant or asleep at the wheel. Mm-hmm. And Fenway Sports Group came under the umbrella of distant, and nobody knows who they are. And I said, if you ask somebody on the street, they'll say and say, hey, who's running the Pittsburgh Penguins? Do you know somebody on the street? And that somebody might say, I don't know, Tom Warner, nobody knows. That's the point. But I only use Tom Warner or Tom Werner, the big guy over at FSG. So I get, after my story appears, last Thursday at 11:30, I don't hear from Matt Wenzel often. He texts me, FSG has their point man at every game, Joe. It's Teddy Werner.
Teddy.
To which I responded, good for him. Nobody knows that except a beat writer such as yourself. My point is, nobody seems to know who runs the Penguins these days, and it feels to me like people aren't overly thrilled with FSG and that they've alienated Mario. and I never heard back from him. What is going on with that text exchange? Was he being aggressive at the beginning limits by telling me, hey, get your story right? Or what's going on here?
I don't know if it was aggressiveness, but maybe a little standoffish about the question, yeah.
He's telling me, hey, they do have a guy over there, and it's Teddy Werner. Okay, I don't care. Nobody knows that.
Right. Your point is they have not engaged themselves to the Pittsburgh fan base, a team they own, a property which they currently make all the decisions, and they're in this city. They need to become more involved.
They so feel like a cold corporate entity.
Right.
Like
that is just a bean counter. This is a this is something we own.
This is
therefore
one of our
we're
properties.
Operating it as a bean counter.
Yes.
We want to make money. It's same concept.
Like Mr. Potter and It's a Wonderful Life. That feels to me like FSG. They're just counting the beans. And by the way, they managed to alienate the most important person in the history of the franchise. So I don't care which Werner is over at the stadium. Although I think Matt is a very nice man. But
Is Dean Werner related? Maybe he is.
You'd have a 0.0 goals against average if they put Blutarski in goal.
Yeah, and they could have cucumber night.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know. Do I have a feud going on with one of the nicest men I've ever met, Matt Fentzel? His text felt reprimanding, Bob, and I snapped on him. I did. When I said, good for him, nobody knows that except a beat writer such as yourself. Did I come back too aggressively?
That was a little passive-aggressive.
Was it? No, that was aggressive-aggressive.
Aggressive-aggressive, yeah.
It was aggressive, yeah.
Maybe that accounted for this.
But are you and Matt good friends?
No, I don't even know him. I've only seen him twice, probably.
If you were like better friends and you were buddies, I feel like you could be able to get off with that type of jargon as like joking.
Right. Maybe he resents the fact I'm never there, but why would I be
there? I think we should play a little game. You should come back with another text right now. So it's been a long time. There's been a silence.
Am I to take
that? Do I take that meaning you don't like me?
Yeah. You know what that means? It's time for the Limitless Express. Hop on board, everybody. Limits, it's your show.
Michael Duracco, ESPN's reporter covering the Jacksonville Jaguars, reported 2 hours ago that, and according to the Trevor Lawrence rumor, report, whatever you want to call it, a Jaguars source told him there's no chance that Jacksonville will trade Lawrence, and that source also called the idea ridiculous. He circled back 20 minutes ago saying that the Jaguars source said that no conversation with the Steelers regarding a potential trade for Trevor Lawrence even took place.
Mark Caballi doubled down on that. He just tweeted out, the Steelers in no way imaginable inquired about trading for Trevor Lawrence and have no interest in even reaching out to the Jaguars about acquiring Lawrence, according to his source.
Holy bird milk, Bob. This thing's falling apart faster than the Steelers' season. What do you make of it?
Just as I said at the beginning, there are a lot of things out there. People put stuff out. And this is the time of year where it seems to, you know, intensify just because of the questions they have. And then you're going to get reports. I don't know what's right and I don't know what's wrong. If they inquired, good for them. If they didn't, yes, you maybe should. I would ask all questions. That doesn't mean a deal is imminent in any way, nor
so,
do
I mean,
I
basically,
getting, I would expect them to call all aspects of trying to upgrade their quarterback situation.
Okay. I'm with you there.
But if it didn't happen, then.
Well, basically, these people are calling Ryan Burr a blatant liar because he said in his tweet that he said it was right from the horse's mouth in somebody in the Jaguars organization. So either somebody lied to him, he's just delusionally lying in the tweet, or these people are getting bad information. I don't know. I'm sure everyone will say that's why they don't trust the media anymore. Maybe that is why they don't trust the media anymore, Bob. There you go.
So it's you know, it's what you want to believe, and that's
but,
why
but I will
don't
say
like
this.
Engaging in a lot of this stuff when people ask. I don't know, and I'm not going to pretend I do one way or the other, so I'm not going to make a side or pick a side. I don't know. Do you know? Nobody.
No.
If you don't know, I don't.
But I will say this, that last year people made fun of like when Peter King would come on here and intimate that Mike Tomlin would be interested in a guy like Russell Wilson.
Totally agree.
And he's very hooked in. Those are the people I look at more than people I know are hooked in. Jerry Dulac has a direct line to Art. Now, have the Steelers sometimes thrown Jerry off with information? I would argue, yes, once in a while. Like with the Kenny Pickett situation. where Jerry reported that Mike Tomlin only had eyes for Malik Willis and there was zero chance they would take Pickett. But I know that Jerry has that line. So that opens my eyes when I see that. I know that Jay Glazer has a direct line to Mike Tomlin. So when Jay Glazer says to the world that that Russell Wilson is probably moving on here, then I think Russell Wilson's moving on. I don't know Ryan Burr hardly. I don't know what kind of line he has on the Jags or who he talked to. But I'm not going to dismiss what he said, nor am I going to completely buy what everybody else is saying. You know?
Right, which leaves us back to square one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they should be doing due diligence on whatever their plan is, they're trying to probably still formulate it.
Yes.
And if it means calling other teams just to inquire, it never hurts. I don't care who you're talking about. If I'm a GM with any team, I'd inquire about everyone. I'd want to know. I want to know what the cost is.
Next.
I don't understand why they wouldn't even at least ask, but here nor there. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Amon-Ra St. Brown hopes that the NFL sends the Lions to Philadelphia for the 2025 season opener. There's a long list of teams that could go to Philly. I feel like the NFL, though, Joe, would rather have the Lions and Eagles game in like week 15, week 16. Would you like to see it start the season?
I'm sorry, Limits. I was completely distracted. Give me the choices of teams that could open the year in Philly. Do you have them?
It's everyone on their schedule at this point. You just have to pull up their 2025 schedule.
Yes, yeah, so games. Washington, Cowboys, Giants in the division, or the Bears, Lions, the Raiders, the Rams, or Denver.
See, I would go with Washington. I know it's a division game right off the bat. Is it? Wait a minute. No, it isn't a division. What am I talking about?
Yeah, it is. Washington and the Eagles.
Oh, that's right. It is. I was thinking about Detroit. Yeah, it is. It's a division game right off the bat. Therefore, I would think that's a big... And given where Washington is and where they are,
I would make it a special... I know. That's enticing, but they usually go out of division, or am I wrong about that? I think they usually do.
Typically, like when the Steelers went to New England and they were raising the banner. Remember when the Lions went to Kansas City and won after they won the championship?
Right. That was a big win for them at the time, yep.
Well, it's called the NFL kickoff game. Am I right about that,
That's
Bob?
That's right.
It's been going on since 2002. Ravens, Chiefs, Lions, Bills, Rams, Bucks, Cowboys, Chiefs, Texans. The last one in division was Green Bay, Chicago in 2019. They hardly ever go in division, Bob. So make your next pick. Who would you want?
I would take Detroit then. I'd like Detroit.
You know who I'd actually want in this game? Detroit's a pretty good pick. You can't go wrong. I think the Bears would be mighty intriguing with Ben Johnson at the controls, Caleb Williams. I want to see Bears-Eagles, Bob. That's the game I want to see. Limits?
I fully agree. And I feel like the NFL, with Ben Johnson paired with Caleb Williams in a second year, and Chicago being a big market, they'll try to market this game as much as possible. I could see it because the Bears should have some decent upside going into next year.
Do you remember any of the Steelers' NFL kickoff games, Bob? One was Pittsburgh against Miami in 2006. Do you know who the starting quarterbacks were? Wrong. Do you know?
In 2006?
Yes. Nick Saban coached the Dolphins in that game.
My goodness, you're going way back.
It was Ben against... Was it Ben?
I'm trying to think who the Miami quarterback would have been.
Wrong. Dante Culpepper.
That name actually popped into my mind.
2009, it was the Titans against the Steelers. Do you remember who the starting quarterbacks were in that game, Bob?
Ben and...
Wrong.
It wasn't Ben? Charlie Batch?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh.
It was Ben.
Ben and Tennessee.
Oh, man, is this a great question.
Was it Vince Young?
No, but that's a good guess.
It was too late for, or too early for Jake Locker.
Kerry Collins. And do you know who scored the only touchdown that game for the Steelers, Bob? Wrong. Santonio Holmes. And Jeff Reed kicked two field goals to tie the game in the fourth and win it in overtime, 13-10. Did you know Jeff Reed, Bob? Did you frequent
sheets? Oh, very well.
Did you frequent sheets with him from time to time?
Well, remember when he used to have his hair like all white or different colors? So I went down and took him to the place where I get my hair cut because I wanted to do the same thing. I got a spike look.
Did you?
But I got red, white, and blue. Yes, spike looked. And I brought him in the studio because we did a segment with Jeff once a week in the studio. And so I showed up in the studio with the hair like that just to make him feel more comfortable.
That is tremendous.
How quick did it take for you to get your hair back to normal?
It took a while to get all that stuff out of there. Yes, it did. But it was interesting, the spike look.
And the only other one was the 2015 Steelers opened the season in New England against the Super Bowl champion Patriots. Do you remember that game, Bob?
No, it wasn't much of a game, wasn't it?
The Steelers hung in there. It was 28-21 at the end. No, it wasn't much of a game. They sucked. It was 28-14, and then Antonio Brown caught a touchdown pass with 11 seconds left. Limits, Rob Gronkowski caught 1, 2, 3, or 4 touchdowns against the Steelers in that game.
I think it was 3.
Bob, do you agree with that?
2.
3. Very good, Limits. They always had a little trouble covering him, didn't they, Bob?
It didn't matter if it was him. Any of the tight ends, not just limited to New England, any tight end, they haven't changed a lot of what they do against some prominent tight ends, and they paid the price for that.
That's when linebackers regarding tight ends, Bob.
If either one of you get the Steelers kicker right in that game, I'll bring in a treat for you tomorrow for tomorrow's show. Who was the Steelers kicker in 2015 in New England?
John Sweezum?
No. Nope.
I'm going to guess that that's the year Sweezum blew out his knee in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's going to be the guy from Jacksonville.
They Josh Scobie.
Scobie.
He was done with his guess, and then he jumped in and gave you a clue. I'm not bringing in treats tomorrow.
No, Scobie was a try, and he was terrible.
Yeah, you're right, but you only got one guess, and then you help Limits.
There is no parameters to this game.
There was a clear parameter. It was his turn to take a guess.
Joe, the game is not meant to be specific. You did not say that it had to be very specific in how we came to the conclusion of our answer.
All right. If you double up on this, I will bring a treat in tomorrow. That was highly questionable what you did, Bob, ethically,
You're welcome, Bob.
Who caught Will Johnson had a 1-yard touchdown run for the Steelers. Who caught the 2-point conversion from Ben to make it 21-11? He was a receiver at the time.
This was
2015. Who caught the 2-point conversion? This is unbelievable. This guy wasn't that bad. I kind of liked him, Bob.
You got it? Go ahead.
I think I got it.
Yes.
Was it Marcus Wheaton?
I'm bringing in treats tomorrow. Let's go, Bob. Give him a hand.
What number did he wear?
Bob, give him a hand.
That's a good answer.
Bob is jealous of you right now. Yes, he didn't want to give you a hand.
What number was he? 11? Is that correct?
I think it was 11.
I was trying to remember
numbers. That is unbelievable, Limits.
Marcus Wheaton.
That was the teams I grew up with, Joe.
What a man he is, huh, Bob?
Yeah, that was a great guess.
He doesn't sound thrilled.
Bob wanted the treat.
I wanted the treat.
He had 7 touchdowns between 14 and 15. I don't know. Was he any good, Bob? Yeah, 1 year he had 44 catches.
He was. Didn't he go to the Bears after that?
Yes, he did. And he only had 3 catches. And then he came back here and had none. And that was the end of his career.